Hey everybody, it's Walker. I just wanted to give you a heads up that Milton has just added two new classes. So he'll be teaching a one-month session in March, beginning on March 2nd. And then directly following that, he'll be teaching a one-week intensive, in-person intensive in Berlin during the first week of April. If you are interested, if you want to register, if you just want to know more information, feel free to email me directly at questionsformilton@gmail.com. Welcome to I Don't Need an Acting Class with Milton Justice.
I was given an in-person audition, and I don't have a smartphone, and so when I had gotten to the place where the bus was supposed to get off from, I just checked the bus on my phone, and then I noticed that it had been taken off route. But then I see the bus pass me, and I just chase after it, and I run my ass off. And at the very last station in Manhattan, before it goes up to Queens, that's when I get on it. And I'm not even going to be in the country when this production is taking place, but I got a call back.
I had an in-person audition, and I went to the bus stop to where I'm supposed to get the bus, and I have a flip phone by choice. And so I go onto my phone and punch in the numbers to figure out, see where my bus is, and it's gone. And so I call up the people and I figure out where am I supposed to be, where I'm supposed to get this bus. And they told me, and I had to walk 7 blocks to get there. And so I walked the 7 blocks to the new bus stop. And as I get there, the bus that I'm supposed to be on is passing me by. So I find myself running after this bus. But long story short, I got the call back.
I booked an in-person audition this week in Brooklyn. So I'm not really like a tech iPhone type of girl. So I like MapQuest everything, write out the whole bus route the night before. So I get out there, I'm waiting for my bus. About 20, 30 minutes go by, not seeing it. So I end up texting like the 1-800 bus number, you know, to see where it's at. It's like the bus has been taken completely off the route. So I'm looking around trying to, you know, think of my next move. And so I see another bus come and I ask them, you know, like, where's like bus 123? And he's like, oh yeah, you know, you gotta walk down 7 blocks, catch this bus and you'll be good. So as I'm walking to the next bus stop, I see the bus that I thought was off the route, like running past me. So I book it down the street. I'm chasing this bus for like 10 to 12 miles. And like finally, right before my legs give out, I end up catching the bus. And as I'm sitting on this bus, looking out the window and thinking like, damn, like I'm doing all this just to catch this damn bus. And I'm not even going to be able to make it to the shoot if I book this thing.
I think it's so funny what we remember. Very good. Very good. Very good. What did you all learn from this exercise? What did you figure out?
I felt that what was important is not only when I heard the story that I had my own images of as in this instance, he was describing it, right? And then in the retelling it, it was the replaying to a degree, seeing those images too, that allowed me. And I could have gone deeper into the images in terms of how to describe them, but I want, you know, it's like, I also wanted to, it's a very interesting thing, because it might have been my impulse, but it wasn't necessarily what he did, you know what I mean? And I wasn't trying to exactly do what he did, but I also wanted to honor the images that were popping that he created, well, I created by listening to him, right? And so by playing them in my head, I was able to really kind of see the story I was telling that I had heard and saw initially.
I was thinking about, that's why we watch plays, the same play all over. I mean, when Diane talked about Tartuffe, it's a play that I love. I've seen it like, I don't know, maybe 7 different, you know,
wow,
productions. And I love Molière, so I was like, oh my God, that's why we re-listen, re-watch the same story by different actors, you know, different productions, because it arouses in you different things, even if the same character, the same story, because of the person that is performing it. So this is the thing that came pop to my mind.
I try to grab onto what I can. So I knew it was COVID, I knew she was nervous, and why am I telling it? So that's what I really do, is grab a few things, and why am I telling it?
Anybody else comment? Very nice. Michael?
I was just gonna say, you know, it's not about the words, you know, I get it. It's what it feeds you, you know? Like what you said, you know, doesn't have to be work perfect. So just taking details from something and, you know, allowing it to feed you.
Good. So several things that I think. One thing that I think is, I believed everybody when they told somebody else's story, which is important. Because it tells me you can act. And by the way, you'll be interested, Douglas. This is how I do auditions. I mean, this is how I've been doing auditions for years. I don't have people read the text. I have people come in, usually it's however many actors are auditioning. And if it's a large group, I'll put them into 2 groups and we'll sit around and I'll have everybody tell a story. And then I'll say to the other actors, okay, choose somebody else's story and tell me the story. And that's how I audition actors. It's like I can tell from what people grab onto. I can tell, you know, it's like anybody can prepare an audition. So it was really, really clear that everyone can make believable the circumstance of a play. Everyone can make believable a plot. But what I began to realize this time when we were doing it is you gave yourself permission not to get it right. You gave yourself permission just to remember what you remembered. And that is how we have to start. The next thing that we're going to do is paraphrase either an editorial, or I will send you all commencement exercises so that you're paraphrasing text. But this is important to understand. What you're doing is owning the thoughts. You don't have to get it right. And what you're doing is, this was the first time. It was almost like, I heard it, now I'm doing it. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's how you work on sides, not plays, but that's how you work on sides. You read through them and then tell me what's going on. And then you look back and say, oh, I missed that. Now I'm going to do it again. And this time I got it. And again, plays are more difficult because if you can't do script analysis of plays, you're totally doomed. If you don't know how to really look in depth into characters in a play, then you have a problem, because you will play the lines or you will play the plot. You will not play what's going on with the character. That's what takes talent.
I mean, are you making a distinction there between script analysis that you do for a play versus not calling it even script analysis that you can do for an audition?
Yes. And mostly, I think so, because, and look, I get in trouble all the time. I've told you this before. I get in trouble when I'm sitting around people and I make, perhaps you have noticed about me, I live my life making sweeping generalizations. One of the sweeping generalizations I've made before is that films and television are about plot and plays are about character. And I got to a really, really big argument at a dinner party in Hollywood years ago when the woman said to me, "That's so untrue. There are characters in movies." And then I said, "I'm sorry, I'm not sure who you are. Who are you?" And she said, "I edited Magic Mike." And I went, "Ah, okay, now I get it. Yes, yes, that's why you understand about character." And then I made her promise to send me the outtakes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So here's the question I have, and I appreciate, which is, if the focus of on-camera work for the sake of what we're discussing is plot, the question begs itself from my point of view is, like, what then, if you are somebody who's able to distinguish what the plot is in the audition, and you know your function, what is your contribution?
Okay, brilliant question. It's the same thing as people doing the same story. My contribution is how I tell the story. And that's really it. My contribution is how I tell the story. And I have to really be smart. I have to be really good. I have to be really confident. I've been having a fight with Diego's agents, who keeps sending
in my head.
But you're dying to do it in person. Oh my God. Because he's Mexican, they keep sending him out for gangbangers. Well, let me look at him.
It's inmate coming up for Ryan Murphy, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at him.
I'm the guy not fucked someone.
You know, he cut his beard because I told him to. And I said, "No, you need to be going out for Suits LA," which, oddly enough, they're now. But I mean, it's like, you know, you look like a young executive. But because, and this is, look, you know, career advice is a nightmare. How people see you is a nightmare. When Caleb first came to me, he had a beard. And I said, "What the hell do you have a beard for?" I've become my father, by the way. My father once offered to buy me a car if I cut my hair and cut my beard. And that's when I knew I was a whore. I did. But at any rate, I mean, yeah, I mean, it is important to know the form you're in. You can't take moments. The number of times I've said to Diego, move it on. You know, nobody wants you to take a moment. You know, that's really the difference. In a play, you have that luxury. I worked with Harold Pinter, who's famous for pauses. But Harold happened to be in a play he had written. At the time, The Collection, which I never told him I'd seen Olivier do. But at any rate, and so I was with one of the assistants in the office, and I turned to her at one point, and as we were watching Mr. Pinter, and I said, "Ah, that's how you play a Pinter pause." Because they were famous. We all grew up reading Harold Pinter, knowing that there was the famous Pinter pause. But I mean, the thing about it is, it's not a pause. It's a very filled moment where we watch the character thinking. Well, if what you're doing is about a plot, I don't need to watch you thinking. You need to have already been thinking. And so, I mean, that's the thing. Now, the question is, so what do I bring to the table? And what I bring to the table is exactly what we learned in this exercise. I bring a road into it that's fresh and interesting.
This might be sacrilege, because this is what, when you said you need to already be thinking, I immediately went to, and this is total fucking sacrilege, that, as you know, with Shakespeare, you're thinking on the line instead of before or after. Is that the implication that you're saying?
Yes, it's Shakespeare. No, I've coached a lot of people in Shakespeare. I don't consider myself really good at Shakespeare. What I really know about Shakespeare is, well, you still have to have a reason to go out there. Something has to be going on with Hamlet. Something has to be going on with Henry. Something has to be going on. Okay. But, you know, to me, the difference between Shakespeare and realism is that Shakespeare gives it to you, and so the job is to earn it. In realism, they give you nothing. And so it's like you have to write it. The difference is, I mean, in Merchant of Venice, Portia, talking about the quality of mercies, has got like 17 lines. The quality of mercy does her thing. It dropped us the dews from heaven. It is thrice blessed. I mean, she goes on and on and on. If you're doing a realistic play, Diane walks in and says, please have mercy. But in her has to be 17 lines. So it's like, to me, there are people who believe that if you can do Shakespeare, you can do anything. I think if you can do realism, you can do anything. I mean, to me, that's the biggie. That's the difficulty. You know, being able to do realism is huge. It's just enormous. So anyway, I would never liken it as sacrilege, Shakespeare to television, but I think you just, to me, it's like you read through it and then I say, so what's going on with you? And say, well, I'm sitting here with this guy and his wife, and I'm supposed to be here and I'm delivering this sort of thing. And so now I'm going to tell you the story. And it's right up there with something that happened to me this week. Then I go back and I say, all right, look at it again. Tell me what's happening. So you're like, oh, I forgot that. Okay. So now I go through and I tell the story again. And so now I pick up something that I forgot. And then I keep building on it. I keep building on it. And then all of a sudden, the next time I do it, I add improvisationally. Or if I allow myself to look, and this is what you all did with this exercise. You allowed yourself to add things that became your contribution. But you see what I mean? And then the next time that I do it, it's like all of a sudden, now I start endowing my partner with moments. And so basically what I do, and this is the reason, I think, Douglas, that we don't have to worry if we don't have a lot of time. It's because I can work on this. I can work on this, and in about 20 minutes max, I can flesh out the entire scene.